move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm sitting today with the highly talented, high-performance executive coach, Judy Skilling. Judy, how are you today?
Oh, I'm great, Travis. Such an honor and pleasure to be here with you. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I just love these online Zoom meetings. And some people just like scoured their face and are like, ugh, more Zoom meetings. Well, the key is I don't do too many of them. And all the ones that I do are with people that are exciting and telling me about their passion, doing wonderful things. So you just got to have more Zoom meetings with the right people, I think. Judy, why don't you share with the audience all the stuff that you do?
Yeah. So I am a certified high performance coach. I'm also a Navy veteran. I served 7 years as a corpsman. Yep. And absolutely loved it. And I have been a coach for the past few years, about 2 to 3 years now. I've been a coach. And before that, my background is actually in nursing. So I was an emergency room nurse for 9 years, being a military medic, you know, corpsman, and then being in the medical field for like close to 20 years. And so chose to make the shift when I experienced some personal loss and some personal trauma. You know, I had lost my husband to cancer and it kind of just changed everything for us. And what prompted me to go into coaching was that during the times of being with him through his cancer battle and working 12-hour shifts as an ER nurse and taking care of a little one, we had a toddler at the time, she was like less than one. Life was hard. It was like a struggle and wanting to be there for my family, but also having the monetary obligations to support family and to make sure that, you know, we had a roof over our heads and food on the table and being the sole income provider. But I wanted to find things for me to do like at home. And so I found coaching, and I would say that coaching found me. And then once I understood the power of coaching, I fell in love with it. And I knew that that was like the next thing I needed to focus on. And when I looked into high performance coaching, I got into it after my husband had passed away from cancer because I wanted some sort of structure and I wanted some sort of guidance. And I wanted to be like, okay, now what do I do with my life? You know, I've just now experienced this. What next? So I invested in myself and I went through high performance coaching and I absolutely loved it. Everything that I learned in the military, you know, my nursing background just complemented high performance coaching so much that, you know, I had written a book in a week and got it self-published within 30 days. You know, like I started exercising and, you know, my relationship with my daughter was better. And I was like, oh my gosh, I absolutely love this. How do I use this and give this back to, you know, the people that I really care about? And so I invested into becoming a coach. And because I knew how powerful it was for me, I decided to become a high performance coach and really just focusing on military veterans and really just understanding if it was powerful for me with what I've learned in the military. I know it can empower lots of veterans and lots of military people, the same stuff that I learned. And so right now I work with military and veteran entrepreneurs and I help them maximize their productivity by minimizing distractions that we all have. And, you know, and I help them enhance their wellness so that they have energy day to day so they can complete things and they don't feel like burnt out. And I also help them maintain like a healthy work-life balance, you know, because we are groomed to continuously be improving. And so when we do that, sometimes we forget about those that support us and love us, like our family, our friends and stuff. So I work with military and veteran entrepreneurs to sustain all three of those key aspects of our lives. And the results have been absolutely amazing. And I love hearing the stories. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so awesome. I'm so glad, you know, and it's just, it's you that did it. I just helped you find what works for you. So that's kind of how I came into coaching and then absolutely love it.
It's one of the things that gets me all fired up and excited. For those of you listening that haven't figured it out, I also do coaching and consulting for nonprofits as well. And we have groups and we have fun things that we talk about. And I love it because if you win, I win. And I get to share success with you. And if you're around people right now that aren't sharing your success or excited about what it is that you're doing, then you're around the wrong people. Because when that energy gets infused in you and through you and with you, it's it's better than crack. So I've heard. I don't have personal experience in that arena, but from everything that I hear, it is phenomenal. And these conversations is what really gets me going and gets me fired up. And I love talking about people when they're winning. But today, we're going to talk about an article you just submitted. And you've been published all over. You're an entrepreneur and you're on Medium and all over the place. And your book's on Amazon, Unhot, The Mess You Are. But you just submitted an article about with the question, are you sabotaging your own success? And then we're going to talk about how to identify that and what that might look like. And I got to be a little honest. We were talking about it going through these little things in our little pre-interview. I was like, ooh, that's definitely something that that I was doing. And I say it was by the time this airs, I'm definitely going to be past it. I'm not worried about that. But all the stuff that we're going to talk about today isn't just for veteran entrepreneurs. It applies to the nonprofit world. It applies to what we're doing and what we take action with in our lives. And Judy, are so many people just out there sabotaging their own success?
There's a difference between knowing that you're doing it with intention versus unknowing that you're doing it. And I think that's when we don't know we're doing something, we don't see a problem. Like, you know, if you're not aware that you're doing something and you think it's okay, or if you're just not aware, then there's no problem. So I think there's a majority of us that are unknowingly or subconsciously, it's like, you know, if we're talking about the brain and things like that, subconsciously sabotaging our own success or your own success. And it's just through learned behaviors, or there's the fear, or there's some beliefs that probably aren't true. And the difference between people who know that they're doing it, like they are like, no, I am an adult and I know full and well what I'm doing. Obviously, they're not going to be successful. But I think a majority of us who are in the business or nonprofit or entrepreneur lifestyle or landscape might be doing things you're like, oh, I didn't realize that was an issue until somebody had pointed that out. And, you know, when somebody points that out, then you're like, oh, there's the problem. Now I can see it. And now I can fix it, because awareness is always the first step. So when you're aware of something, then you know, okay, now I know how to like fix it. Now I know how to tweak it or change it. Or maybe I need to reprogram some beliefs that I thought were true, but that are not serving me anymore.
That has been coming up in my world here a lot recently. Reprogramming your beliefs. When a situation happens, we go to our filing system in our head and look at all the files associated with whatever we've done or been doing or been taught. And a lot of people aren't aware that we have the ability to accept or reject the things that we're shown. And a lot of times you hear something growing up like money is the root of all evil. And you just take that, you don't question it, you download it into your system and you just hold on to that thing. And then so you have people in the nonprofit world who thinks money is the root of all evil while they're trying to ask for money, and they wonder why they're not successful. Well, every time you look at the money file in your head and it says money is the root of all evil, which by the way is not true. The quote from the Bible is the love of money is the root of all evil. And people ask, you know, well, how important is money? And Zig Ziglar says it's not the most important, but it's reasonably close to oxygen. It's saying it's important, but it's a tool. But if you have the limiting belief that says money is the root of all evil or something to that nature, and you're in the nonprofit world trying to raise money, you're going to struggle because what you're trying to do is not in aligned with what you believe. And so we're going to dissect that here a little bit. What's the first thing to recognize when you might be sabotaging yourself?
So this one I love, procrastination. And I think we all, excluding myself, like being completely honest and transparent here, like we all at one point or another have procrastinated on something that is, you know we need to get it done and we just don't want to do it, or we find things that are a little bit more enticing than what we really need to get done, because it's, you know, what I call like what Brian Tracy in his book, you know, Eat That Frog. So he talks about tackling, you know, your big frogs, the big things that you have to get done. And there's a lot of strategies and tools out there on Google. You know, you can Google everything about overcoming procrastination, delay, whatever. But the point is just like when we procrastinate, sometimes we base it off of our emotions. You know, I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to do it. And the way that we are all programmed is like we have these thoughts and our thoughts create our emotions, you know, and I kind of talk about that a little bit on my book, but it's just like our thoughts create our emotions, which create our actions, which create our results. You know, it's just like the thing, but a step below that is sometimes we procrastinate on things that we convince ourselves that it's okay to do because we find something else that's better, or we make up what I call like fake truths. And an example that I shared with you was like, okay, I don't want to call this person because they're really busy, you know, and I don't want to seem like I'm bothering them. So I'll just do it maybe later on in the day when they're probably at home or they're not as busy, you know, first thing in the morning, they're probably, I don't want to bother them. I'll just do this instead. And it sounds legit, you know, when we tell ourselves, like we convince ourselves like, no, that's okay. I'll just do that later. I won't do that right now because of X, Y, and Z excuse we tell ourselves. And it's a fake truth or it's a fake belief. And we buy into that because it sounds, our mind, oh boy, our mind can tell us some conniving stuff. Let me tell you, like,
yeah, we can justify anything.
But anything. Yeah.
I want to jump in here real quick. And what we're not talking about is choosing self-care over something that needs to be done. And that's not what we're talking about, because self-care is very important. You can't pour from an empty cup. What we're talking about is, oh, I really need to do this, but man, you know, the floor needs to be vacuumed too. I'm going to vacuum the floor. That's right here. That's handy. I can do that real quick. Or I got these five things on my list I know I can knock out pretty quick, but this one thing, this big thing that has to be done, the one that actually impacts my organization, that's actually aligned with the mission, that's actually kind of big, I'm not going to do that because I can get five things done instead of this one thing done. Well, you know, as it turns out, those five things that you got done, they don't move the needle at all. And they have nothing to do with actually getting the mission done.
And we tell ourselves like those five things are important. And I'm not saying that they're not or whatever, but you justify like, no, these things are important, but it's not as important, you know? And especially since we're all working from home, those pile of dishes, if I don't wash dishes, I won't have anything to cook. So like, I won't have anything to eat off of. So I got to do the dishes. It's true, but it doesn't really help with your end goal. So
yeah, busyness does not equal progress.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, when our mind starts to create and justify things and we buy into it and we believe it, that is a form of procrastination that is beyond, oh, I really don't feel like doing this, you know, kind of emotion. It's, you know, it's our mind is playing tricks, but it develops that sense of awareness when you're like, okay, is this true? When you ask yourself, is this true? And immediately you'll know what you need to do when you ask yourself that question, when you try to justify and make an excuse or why you need to do those five things versus, you know, is this true that these five things will get me to my end goal?
Wow. Yeah, this is something my wife does every year. And I think she's just addicted to making lists. Like she really likes to make lists because every year about this time, she's like, who should be on our Christmas card list or who should be on the whatever? And if you're listening to this in like February, I'm sorry, because we're recording this in November before Thanksgiving. If you're a February list writer for Christmas, more power to you. But I was like, Katie, where's your list from last year? And she's like, well, you know, I didn't, like we've been together for 20 years. Like, I think you just really enjoy making the list instead of just keeping the list and then building off of it next year, crossing names off. Maybe she doesn't want to cross names off the list that are no longer, you know, in our lives or whatever, but she could have the list made. She could just maintain the list. Maintaining the list is way easier than recreating the list each and every year. I don't know why she does it. Maybe this is aligned with that. Maybe I'm just complaining about my wife. I don't know.
Yeah. You know what? It's just, if it gives her pleasure, have at it. Run with it, baby. Like, do your thing. And I'm a list builder, and there is always that small little fire of excitement when I cross something off, when I check a box off. You're like, oh yay, I got a box checked off today.
Are you the person that did something that wasn't on the list and then you add it to the list just so you can cross it off?
No, I'm a little bit more structured. No, I have my list. I know what I'm sticking to. It's keeping me focused.
I've done that. Not gonna lie. I didn't do anything on that stupid list, but I did this other thing. So I'm going to add it to my list, cross it off. And I'm going to
put it on myself. Well, you're productive today. Yeah. She likes making lists. Let her do her thing. Just
check it off. But I'm going to do this important thing, but oh, my phone just chimed and I'm going to check on that before I do the thing. What do you call that?
FOMO.
FOMO, or is it shiny object syndrome?
I think it's more so, it's a distraction for sure. And when we talk about shiny object syndrome, I think we talk about, you know, especially in the world of, you know, maybe business, nonprofit and things like that too. You're like, oh, well, this is that one strategy that's really just, this is the holy grail. This is what I've been looking for. And, you know, because you've seen the marketing ads, I'm sure. You've seen lots of programs or courses or books or whatever out there. Whenever you read that review or testimony, it's like, this changed my life. And using those types of, you know, proclamations, if you will, like standing on the hilltop saying, this is the best thing. Shiny object syndrome, unfortunately, is probably one of those things that we subconsciously can sabotage our success. And as entrepreneurs or as business owners, or just even human beings, we are high idea generators, especially entrepreneurs and business owners. You know, we create lots of ideas. You know, like, oh, I could do this, I could do that, I could do that, I could do that. And the thing is that when we are high idea generators, we take on something and we might not finish it. And that's where the shiny object syndrome kind of does come into place, because you have this idea, you're like, oh, that makes perfect sense. This is what I'm going to do. Like, this is the strategy I'm going to now implement. So you go and you find whatever it is and you get it, but you don't ever complete it. And so you've now wasted money and time. And now you're like, oh, that didn't work, or whatever the excuse you might say. And you find something else, and you find something else, and you find something else. And when you do that without actually following through and completing it and actually putting that into play and action to see the results, and when you just kind of continuously find all these different things, the distraction, it's a distraction. But to kind of further talk about that, I was reading a research article. And I don't remember exactly what university did the study, but our brain thrives on novelty. You know, when we introduce something new to our brain, we release all those endorphins. They're like, oh, it's new and it's exciting. And when we do that, you're triggering that release of emotions or those release of endorphins that makes us feel good. So when we see something that's new and shiny, it's that novelty that's attracting it to us. And when we follow through and we're like, oh, we just got a shot of adrenaline, we're all happy now. And then it wears off. And that's probably, you know, that's why we never really follow through with anything, because that novelty has worn off. And then we're looking up for the next new thing, you know, to get that hit of endorphins or the feel good hormones and things like that too.
Oh yeah. What this might look like in the nonprofit world is this new type of fundraising, or this new thing that exists, this is going to be the thing that really brings in the donations now. Oh, I'm on Flipkos, but there's a new thing, Virtuous. I'm going to switch to Virtuous. And if you're interested in that, I did an interview with the founder, Gabe Cooper. Check that out. But the new thing is not going to save you if you're not following through. Ideas mean nothing without action. I heard in a cartoon growing up that knowing is only half the battle. The other half is that
G.I. Joe.
Ideas are wonderful and they're great, but they mean nothing unless you put it into action. It means nothing if you fall through. If you bought a course online, you're like, I'm going to learn marketing, and you don't even get to module 3, and you're like, I'm not going to finish because of whatever reason, procrastination or shiny object syndrome. And if you do finish, or you do read that book, or you do listen to that podcast, and you know you need the thing, but you don't implement the thing, it's just as worthless. You've completely wasted your time. You've completely wasted your money. You've completely ignored Judy's fantastic advice here. Thanks for that. How can you do such a thing to poor Judy here? But it means nothing. It means nothing unless you take this stuff and actually implement it. Now, we're in the Warrior Council, which is a subsection of the Betpreneur Tribe, veterans and entrepreneurs, Betpreneurs, where people are actually doing the things. And let me tell you, the smiling faces in there, the revenue growth, people holding each other accountable. These mastermind groups are a fantastic way to get going where you're going. And if you haven't gotten the Nonprofit Architect Alliance mastermind group yet, you're hurting yourself. But these are the people that are actually doing the thing. And once you do the thing, you might find out some things about yourself. Like you might find out the first time you do it that you suck. I'm sure the first interview I did on the podcast with Shay Sparks, I didn't have the best conversation. I didn't have the best tech yet. It's not as professional sounding as some of these other ones I've done, but I stuck with it. And every time you do it, you get a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And then you get people like Judy knocking on your door, says, "Hey, I got to be on your show. I've heard great things about it. I need to be on it." And that's how we got here.
Yeah. And here we are talking. And, you know, here we are talking. And the one thing, like, I wanted to just share, like, you know, because our brain is wired for novelty, we love new things, you know. I encourage you to find things outside of the shiny objects to fulfill that need of novelty, which would be like going to a new, you know, going on a new route to work, for example. We're all working at home, but like maybe finding a new route from your, you know, your office to your kitchen or something, but, you know, finding a new place to travel to, or picking up a new hobby, or, you know, other things that are outside of your business to fulfill that novelty need that we all have. Like every human being thrives on novelty. That's that creates, you know, stimulation and ideas and things like that too. So I, you know, and also asking yourself when you're in this shiny object syndrome, like, oh, this is really tempting. I don't know if I really want to go for it. To ask yourself, like, is this aligned with my goal? Is this shiny object congruent with my mission of XYZ, of generating a revenue, of getting so many clients, or, you know, getting some funds? Is this aligned with what I need to do? And only you'll know, yes or no. You know, just recently, my mentor did something online called the Influencer Summit. Had all these people, well-known Jay Shetty, you know, Dave Hollis, you know, all this other stuff. And I chose not to participate, even though there was going to be really great information on terms of increasing your following and all this other stuff, because I knew if I learned anything from that, that would cause me to have shiny object syndrome. And then I'd be like, oh, what about Twitter? Oh, what about Instagram? Oh, no. Like, that's not pertinent to me, like what I really need to focus on, you know? And so that's really, you know, is this aligned with my overall, you know, end goal of, you know, XYZ, whatever that is for you. And that's kind of how you can deviate from shiny object syndrome.
Yeah. So if you're in the nonprofit world and you are a skateboarding church, right? That's the thing that you care about. You care about kids being involved in skateboarding and having a safe place to do it and building a community and following Christ. You're not going to try to bring in someone that has nothing to do with your mission. You're not going to try to have a snowboarding adventure. You might have a snowboarding weekend, right? But you're not going to branch off into snowboarding, likely. You're not going to all of a sudden start, you're not going to bring in stray cats and you'll rehabilitate them. Right? This is not aligned with your mission. You're not going to do that. Now, there's a difference between doing something like that and adjusting during a time like COVID, and maybe instead of doing the program you've been doing, you're now aligned with other organizations that need the support that you can provide for a short period. But mission creep is something that really kills and hurts nonprofits. They get far away from their mission. Your longtime donors are like, we don't even know who you are anymore. How come you're doing this? You haven't communicated with your donors why you might be stepping aside or doing something a little bit different for a short period. You haven't told them. And then they wonder what's going on with their dollars and their, you know, their organization. And so they leave and they go find something else with someone that is aligned with what they say that they're doing. This happens. This is something that's scary in the nonprofit world. This is something that breaks nonprofits up. And this is something that can be a real downer. So I mean, pay attention. Shiny objects, no shiny objects.
Yeah, unless you think it's aligned with your overall goal and mission, and you plan to finish and put it into action, and you follow through, and you test and test and test. And that's what, you know, so it's no longer, and then you're able to ride through the past the novelty phase, you know, and stick with it and to make sure you're actually putting it into action, you know. So that's the key thing too, instead of having 10 different half-read books, which I was guilty of at one point, you know. And I'm like, oh, this is a great book. And this was, of course, years ago, but, you know, my shelf, I was like, yeah, I only read about half of those. So, yeah, which I'm sure there's lots of people out there with and half, you know, half finished courses. And yeah. The number three thing is, which, you know, at one point I was guilty of as well too, is having too many projects going on. You know, thank you for being vulnerable. Yeah, taking on too many projects. This is something where when we take on too many things, then we start to be like, oh, I don't have the time. I'm overwhelmed. I'm too stressed out. Like, I got so much stuff going on. And, you know, when we take on too many projects, we're subconsciously distracting ourselves from what our end goal is, you know, whether it's generating a revenue, raising funds, you know, prospecting, whatever that looks like. You know, when we take on too many projects, we then feel too stretched, you know, and we are like, okay, now I really don't know what I need to focus on. And the illustration that I shared with you earlier was, you know, when we're in a body of water and we're flailing about and we're like, oh, I can't swim. And we're trying to get to the shore and we got our arms like flashing about in the water and we're splashing, we're making all this noise, you know, and we're going to eventually get to the shore. It's just going to take us a very long time, as opposed to somebody who is clear and they're focused on what their end mission is. And they're in this body of water and they know to use their arms and their legs in a really good swimming technique, and they know how best to get to the shore, they do it much quicker and they do it much faster and they get to the shore much quicker. And so that's kind of the illusion I like to share, that when we are clear on what our focus is and we only have one or two projects that are helping us get to our end goal, we put all of our energy into those few projects that's going to get, you know, the maximum result. It's like the 80-20 Pareto principle, pretty much. You know, we put, you know, 20% of our effort in these one or two projects that are going to generate 80% of our result. So when we have too many projects going on and we're flailing about in the water, we're not really going to get to the shore any quicker. And we're always looking around being like, why are those people getting to the shore much faster than I am? You know, and we have that comparisons, you know, and all this other stuff. But that's when we take on too many projects, we are subconsciously, you know, sabotaging ourselves because we're not really focused on one or two of those main things that are going to generate the greatest result for us. And when we are aware that we're like, okay, I got so much stuff going on, I really don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, we've lost sight of that end goal and vision because we got so many things. And then that's when we're just like, I don't have time for my family. I'm overwhelmed. You know, I'm strapped, I'm stressed, you know, my health is declining, you know, I can go on and on, but that's like one of those things that we all
do. So like two things on that. One, Pareto's law, the 80-20 rule, or the 90-10 or whatever you want to talk about. You could 80% of your results from 20% of the work that you're doing. So think about that with donors. 20% of your donors or 10% or 15% are giving you 80% of the money. And what you might notice is that 80% of the headaches are coming from the bottom 20% of the donors. Well, how else might that look like? It might look like that 80% of your results are coming from 20% of your programs. If you have multiple programs, you might decide to cut some of those lower producing programs to allow you to focus on the ones that are getting the real results, the ones that are really needed. Or you might find a partner that's going to take on that workload and it's going to be better for them to do than for you to do.
Delegation.
Absolutely. What this might look like in a personal sense is this might be a boundaries issue. This might be a I can't say no issue. If you are the yes person, if you were the one when they come to you, hey, can you do this? Yes, I absolutely can take this on, knowing full well that you can't, that it's you can't do it, you don't have the time to do it, it's outside your zone of genius, or you believe that saying no is going to fracture or hurt your relationship, you're doing it wrong. And I'm saying this directly, but lovingly and gently, that if you say no and it fractures a relationship, there was never a relationship in the first place. You were never friends. You were nothing other than the person that would just be the yes person to this. And that's not very valuable. And that's not a positive relationship for you to be in. Maybe it's boundaries. Maybe you have a relationship, and this is getting outside of the nonprofit world a little bit.
But it's important. It's all interconnected in one way, shape, or form. It's all completely interconnected.
I remember sitting down with a friend of mine, and she was in the need to get some things off of her chest, and wasn't so much as a hi, Travis, and she was just like, this person is really getting on my nerves. It's a one-way relationship. It's one-way conversations. I only hear from this person when they need something, and they're never there for when I need something. I was like, well, it sounds like you understand where you're at in a relationship. So I don't understand what the real problem is. And she told me the problem was it was her sister. Here's the deal. It doesn't matter what title they have. It doesn't matter how much DNA that you share. It doesn't matter if it's your spouse, your children, your sister, your mother, your aunt. It doesn't matter if they're your boss, your coworker, your supporter. It doesn't matter what their title is. No one's allowed to treat you that way. And if you're letting them treat you that way, you're teaching them how that you expect to be treated.
Yeah. You're enabling the relationship at that point.
Enabling the relationship. You're like, well, I can't cut off my sister. Why not? What magical amount of DNA do you share that says it's okay to be treated this way? If I know that if I walk out in the street, I'm going to get hit by a bus, am I going to keep walking out into that same street? No. I'm going to wait for the traffic to pass. I'm going to go to the light. I'm going to avoid that street. I'm going to do all those things to make sure I don't get hit by the bus. Because you can forgive them and maintain a relationship, but that doesn't mean you have to answer the phone every time they call.
And you know what's beautiful? I love your point about boundaries. And what I love about that is when you establish boundaries, you actually gain a respect from those that you have boundaries with. And when you have, you know, garnered that respect, you're like, you know, I appreciate you asking me right now. I'm really focused on these because of whatever, you know, maybe so-and-so can help you out with that. But when you have established that boundary, that person respects you even more because they know that, you know, your time is valuable. And when they come and ask you something else, they, you know, well, they will ask you, but also when you've established that boundary, they're going to be more valuable of your time and what you have going on. And, you know, and you will earn respect by default. If you keep on saying yes, there's not really much respect there because you're just going to keep on saying yes. And this person's going to keep on doing it because they know it can get away with it. You know, and that's not an abusive, but it's, you know, it doesn't build.
It lacks consideration. Like they haven't considered anything in your world. If they come to you with whatever garbage is on their mind or on their plate and they just shove it off onto yours and you never push back, they might not know that you have stuff going on in your life. They don't have to know the specifics, but you might be legitimately busy. Or you might be legitimately stressed. You might be legitimately not able to do whatever the thing is. And that's perfectly okay. I have people that contact me all the time for new startups, startup nonprofits and different things. And some of them are surprised to hear that I say, I don't believe you should start a nonprofit. Some of them are surprised to hear that, no, we've talked a couple of times and no, I cannot make an appointment with you. You are, maybe you call me and you have this great idea, but your life is in shambles and nothing is going well for you. Well, it might not be the right time to start a nonprofit. Some people call me and they have this great idea. And I say, well, have you canvassed your area and talked to other people in this world? Is anyone doing what you're doing? Well, no, I haven't asked. Well, then I don't believe it's a good time to start a nonprofit yet until you have the answers to the questions. Maybe you ask around, you're like, I really want to do this. And well, that's really great that you want to do that, but that's not the need that needs to be fulfilled for this group of people. Maybe they have a slightly different need or a vastly different need that you didn't consider because you haven't asked. And there's nothing wrong with that. But does that mean you should start a nonprofit? Maybe, maybe not. But I know too many people in the nonprofit coaching and consulting world that are just excited to get the business that they'll say yes to those things. And I'm not here to tell everyone that they should be starting a nonprofit because it's one of the hardest stinking things on the planet to do. Not everyone's cut out for it. people have their due diligence, or they have absolutely no network or friends that are going to help get this thing off the ground. It requires a lot. Building a business is impossibly hard, but starting a nonprofit has all of that, and it's harder, and it has more restrictions, and it has more rules. It's not a casual, I'm going to fall in and do this. It's a, holy crap, there's a lot going on here, and why don't I have any money? Why don't I have any supporters? Did you ask for money? Did you tell your supporters how they can best support you? If you haven't, then you're robbing your supporters of the chance to bless you as well.
Yeah, and you made a really good point in terms of we all like to be people pleasers, you know, and we don't fear of rejection, you know, fear of criticism, things like that too. So we do find ourselves saying, yes, sure, I'll take that on. Yes, sure, I'll do that for you. You know, yes, 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 because we want to please and we want to make sure we don't upset people or hurt people's feelings. And, you know, we want to be gentle and kind, you know, by saying yes. And I'm actually working with a client who's had to shift that because he, you know, has had to shift the terms of being a people pleaser because he's in a leadership position and wants his colleagues and, you know, people that he's working with to like him, which is understandable. You know, we all want to be liked, you know, and in working with me, he's had to shift that and to really set boundaries, you know, in his times and to understand, no, I can't take that on because that's not my job responsibility. That is so-and-so's responsibility, where before he would be like, yeah, I'll take that on, even though that's not my job responsibility, I'll take it on to say yes. And I think that we find ourselves doing that, I'm sure, in the nonprofit world, that you just take on things that are not your responsibility just to keep the peace and to not rock the boat and to make sure that things are all good and happy, but at the sake of, and, you know, at the compromise of yourself or the sake of your own well-being, you know. And that's why when we talk about taking on too many projects, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay, can you cover for Susie? I'm like, well, isn't that Susie's responsibility? Yeah, but we really need it to get done. And like, yeah, okay, I understand your point. If I was in the same situation, not doing stuff, would you ask Susie to cover for me? And if their face twitches a little bit and you can kind of see that it's no, like, you would hold me responsible for this stuff. Why are you not holding Susie responsible for this stuff? You mentioned in there that, you know, it feels kind to say yes. I immediately think to like potential dating situations where gals out there won't tell the guy no. They'll just kind of casually brush him off for like 3 to 6 months or however long that is. It is more kind to release that poor guy because this whole time he still thinks he has a chance. But, hey, I'm sorry, I'm just not interested. That is more kind to cut it off sharp. No, ladies don't usually feel that way, but it's more kind to be direct and say, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. We're not meant to be. Whatever the words are that are direct, no words.
With love and care behind it, you know, not just more of like, you're ugly, I don't want to have anything to do with
you. Yeah, you're an ugly, get out of here. Don't say that.
Don't say that.
I'm sorry. We're not aligned. You're not my type. Like, not at this time. Don't say not at this time, because then they think it's another time that's available, and they'll just keep bugging you. Cut them poor guys free. Cut them free. Let them know that they're free to pursue something else, but you're not interested.
Yeah, it's just not a fit for me, whatever the case may be, and just move on. Yeah. So that's
we covered all of that. Our you know, ways to know that you're sabotaging your own success. But I know people that you've coached, and I've seen the great things that they've done. And what is one of the ways that we can take some of, like, one of your tips that you give for high performance coaching that, you know, our listeners can really implement in their world?
Yeah. So I'll do this with you, Travis, if that's all right.
We're doing it live. Screw it. We're doing it live. Here we go.
We're doing it live. Yeah.
Whatever.
Okay. Yeah. It's recorded. So I'm going to do this exercise with you. And this is an exercise I do with with all of my clients when they start first working with me. And it's just to help kind of ground who they are so that they can really kind of get in touch with who they are as a person, you know, stripping away all roles, you know, and really just kind of getting in touch with who they truly are, their self, like their, you know, I'm really big into spiritual and religion, but it's just like their spiritual self, their soul, and really just kind of stripping that away and really getting in touch to who they are as a person. And so this exercise just takes a few minutes. And so So we're going to sit here and I'm just going to ask you to close your eyes, Travis. And my eyes are closed and I'm doing it here with you as well, too.
We don't have the video here, but I'm closing my eyes.
Okay. And I want you to just take a nice deep breath in and just relax into this moment. And I want you to imagine yourself in the future, let's say 10, 15 years from now. And as you're imagining yourself, I want you to think of three words that best describe your ideal self, your future self. Three words that you would love to have people describe you when they mention your name. Three words that you would be proud to be associated with. And three words that most describe your future self. Whenever you're ready, you can share. Yeah, you can share your words with me.
So you asked me to picture myself 10 or 15 years in the future, and I immediately pictured myself on stage in front of hundreds or thousands of people. I know I've shared my story before in the podcast, and I've shared my story with you, and I want as many people as possible to know that they are enough, that they have the choices to make whatever life they deem that they want to have. And I want to do that on stage. And the three words that popped up into my head are world-renowned speaker. And luckily for me, I know I have the voice for podcasting, but maybe I'll have the face too in 15 years. I don't know. I get some surgery or something. But I really pictured myself on stage spreading this message that you can. We talked about it earlier where you can choose to accept something or reject something. That's kind of the basis of starting this self-actualization or realization that you are in control of these things. You are in control of how you react to a situation. You are in control of what you dedicate your time, energy, and effort into. If you want to do something new and fun and exciting, but you won't show up, then you're choosing to not show up and not do the thing. If you want to be in the medical field, but you don't take the time to learn some basic Latin anatomy, show up to class and get your undergrad and then go to med school and then do your internships and residency and do the, I don't know, 12 or so year process to become a doctor, then it doesn't matter what you envision yourself in the future doing. You have to know that it's available, that applies to you, and that you can do it. And once you have those things, you can be anything. I'm not saying anything, right? Shaq's not going to be a jockey. He's a fantastic man. He does wonderful, amazing things, but he's just thinking big for that. And that's just not how it works. He might do it as a charity event, but that's not going to be his full-time venture. You can do the things that you put your mind to, that you dedicate your time to, that you educate yourself on, that you put focus to, whatever the thing is. If you're like me, you want to know more about nonprofit stuff, you bring on nonprofit experts and you interview them and you get all the freebies that they would normally charge for because you're interviewing them and you're providing them value. It's a fantastic thing. And I love podcasting each and every day that I get to do it and have wonderful interviews with people like Judy.
Yeah. And I challenge you with this world-renowned speaker. And thank you so much for sharing that and participating with this exercise. It was absolutely amazing. And for you being willing to, shut your eyes and to imagine yourself. And I think when our mind creates those images, it actually does turn into reality the more that we plant those minds. So I challenge you to put this into your phone to remind yourself, I'm a world-renowned speaker. I am a world-renowned speaker. I am a world-renowned speaker. And you're doing twofold. You're affirming yourself that you are a world-renowned speaker, but you're slowly bringing that to your world because that's how the law of attraction works. If you're not familiar, I am is present. So today you are a world-renowned speaker. I'm talking to a world-renowned speaker.
It feels pretty great, doesn't it?
Yeah. And usually when I do this exercise, they usually use characteristic words to describe who they are as a person. And so my words, for example, are, I'm determined, I'm focused, I'm disciplined, and these are characteristic type of words. And it's just to put that in your phone to remind yourself of that, those qualities of who you're stepping into as a person, that affirmation that you want to program yourself. And we were talking about that earlier in terms of beliefs and things like that too. And shaping your subconscious beliefs. And it will, like, by law, it comes true. Like, it just has to, depending on how frequently and consistently and repetitively that you're putting those images with the statements and all that other fun stuff that goes behind manifestation and law of attraction and all that woo-woo stuff, which I geek out over, but that's a different time for a different topic.
I mean, there's so many people out there, you hear them talking, they're telling you how they're going to feel when a situation comes up. Like, oh, if that guy cuts me off, I'm going to get pissed. Well, you just told yourself, you just told him through quantum physics or whatever that you want him to cut you off so you can have the opportunity to be upset. Yeah, you're telling him exactly what you want to do. Like, people that are always sick, like, I'm always sick. You just told the world that you're always sick. We'll always be sick. How are you doing, man? I'm having a great day. Really? Well, not right now, but later this afternoon, I plan for it to be a great day. Like, how do you do that? Because I've decided it's going to be a great day.
I'm deciding. I'm having a fantastic, fabulous day.
You decide these things.
Yes. And
people are like, that's not how it works. I'm like,
oh. Fight me on this.
Yeah. Money isn't the most important thing out there. Oh, you must be broke. Wait, what? How do you know I'm broke? You just told me that you don't care about money, which means you don't have any. And there's nothing wrong with being okay with being in that situation, but there's definitely a difference between being okay with where you are and knowing where you want to go and where you want to be and accepting that as your fate and there's nothing you can do about it, which is not true, because there's things that you can do about that. You know, would you rather be poor or broke? Are they the same thing? No. I've been broke. I've had nothing, but I've never been poor. Poor is a mindset.
Preach it, Travis. Yeah, I can talk about this stuff all the time, and I geek out of it, and it's absolutely true. And I've seen it. I do that stuff. I work with it on top of the high performance principles, and things just come into my life, and I'm incredibly grateful for everything. And just be like, thank you so much. You know, I'm welcoming and receiving everything. So it's a wild ride. And just to share that kind of things with people that are above and beyond, it is woo woo universe, all that other stuff, but it's really, I love it.
Hey, well, thanks for, listening to this soapbox edition of The Nonprofit Architect with Judy and Travis. Judy, why don't you tell the world where they can find you and get a hold of you?
Yeah. So you can find me at my website, which is www.judyskilling, all one word, JudySkilling.com. Yeah, he's going to check me out too. And you can find me at www.judyskilling.com. I'm also on Facebook as well as LinkedIn. So you can find me on those social media platforms as well too.
Well, hey, thanks, Judy, again, for being on the show today. Check out her website, judyskilling.com. Thanks again.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.